From NPR News in Washington, I'm Melinda Penkava, and this is Talk of the Nation. Wen-Ho Lee was fired from his job at Los Alamos in March, named in press accounts as a suspect in giving nuclear weapons secrets to China. 5 months later, he has yet to be charged. Senator Joseph Lieberman says the Department of Energy and FBI bungled the investigation.
If the failure to more competently investigate the case means that we have wrongly focused on Dr. Lee, then the person or persons who actually passed the W88 information to the People's Republic of China are still out there.
What can we learn from the Los Alamos security lapses? Today's Talk of the Nation after this hour's news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. The nation's governors are urging President Clinton and Congress to move quickly to help the nation's struggling farmers. At the conclusion of their meeting in St. Louis, the governors approved a resolution calling for immediate aid for farmers and ranchers whose earnings have been undercut by a worldwide glut of crops, unstable markets, and the drought. The governors also voted unanimously to tell Congress not to raid state treasuries to fund any tax cuts. Agriculture Secretary Dan Glickman today declared all of New Jersey and 34 counties in New York State as disaster areas as a result of the drought that's plaguing the eastern half of the nation. NPR's Eric Westerveld has more.
The Clinton administration's Farm Disaster Declaration allows farmers in New Jersey and parts of New York to qualify for emergency low-interest federal loans. New Jersey Governor Christine Whitman asked for the declaration, which could help ease the impact of crop losses. Farmers say the loans will help a little, but funds won't be approved until the fall, and in the meantime, many farmers are hurting. To qualify, farmers must have lost at least 30% of a single crop and be unable to obtain credit elsewhere. Governor Whitman already declared a statewide drought emergency, imposing mandatory water restrictions for residents. It's one of the driest summers on record for much of the region. One-year rainfall totals are 10 to 18 inches below normal for most of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and parts of Maryland and Virginia. Eric Westerveld, NPR News.
New Hampshire Senator Bob Smith announced today that he is seeking the presidential nomination of the U.S. Taxpayers Party. From New Hampshire Public Radio, Av Harris reports.
Smith announced last month that he was resigning from the Republican Party because, in his words, it had abandoned conservative positions on abortion and guns. The party he wants to join is known for far-right positions such as abolishing the income tax, supporting the election of senators by state legislatures, and ending federal support for the National Endowment for the Arts. Smith says with the nomination of the Taxpayers Party, he can win the presidency.
We only need one-third of the vote, actually less, in each state to win its electoral votes. You win with a plurality, and we can do that. And by, I think, combining these forces, the Reagan coalition of 80 and 84 must be put back together again.
Smith says he wants to gain the U.S. taxpayers' nomination on September 4th and change the party's name to the Conservative Party. For NPR News, I'm Av Harris in Concord, New Hampshire.
The Secretary of Education says new figures show that the number of students expelled for bringing weapons to schools dropped by nearly one-third in the 1997 to 98 school year. The expulsions are mandatory under federal law. 16 people were injured when an Alamo rental car shuttle bus slammed into several cars near the entrance to Los Angeles International Airport today. Officials say about half of the injuries are serious. On Wall Street, the Dow is down 102 points at 10,606 in active trading. The Nasdaq down 68 points, a loss of more than 2.5%. This is NPR. In NPR's business update, SGI, the former Silicon Graphics Corporation, has announced plans to lay off up to 3,000 workers, or about a third of its workforce, and spin off its Cray supercomputer unit. SGI is a struggling maker of high-end computers. The company says the changes would help it focus on selling computers and software related to the Internet. But investors do not seem impressed. The company's stock is down about 12% so far today. Lucent Technologies is bolstering its push into the fast-growing area of advising corporations on setting up high-speed data networks. From member station WBGO in Newark, Doug Doyle reports.
New Jersey-based Lucent Technologies, a leading maker of telecommunications equipment, says it's buying international network services for about $3.7 billion. The deal helps Lucent target the growing market for consulting, design, integration, and support for next-generation networks. The deal puts a 14% premium on INS's Monday closing share price. Lucent, once part of AT&T Corporation, has made several recent acquisitions of computer networking companies. INS, based in Sunnyvale, California, had profits of nearly $25.5 million for the fiscal year ended in June, as sales grew 82% to $315 million. That is faster than the industry growth rate for networking services and support. For NPR News, I'm Doug Doyle in Newark.
United Airlines has announced that its frequent flyer miles will no longer expire as long as people fly with the airline or buy from affiliated companies at least once every 3 years. The move follows last week's decision by rival American Airlines to eliminate expiration dates from its frequent flyer plan. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Borders Books and Music, where imaginations can run wild. More than 240 locations across the country and online at www.borders.com.
This is Talk of a Nation. Ray Suarez is away. I'm Melinda Pencava. It was reported earlier this year that the Chinese were privy to U.S. nuclear secrets, secrets that allowed the Chinese to refine the design of their nuclear warheads. In March, Wenho Li, a scientist at the Los Alamos Laboratories, was fired. A Taiwanese-born U.S. citizen, Wenho Li says he's not a spy for the Chinese government and did not pass along secrets. 5 months after he was fired, he has yet to be charged with any crime. This summer, two congressional committees have criticized the way the FBI, the Justice Department, and the Department of Energy failed to work together to get to the bottom of the problem. Also, the congressional committees expressed doubt on whether the investigators had actually solved the case, whether they actually had their man. But the Department of Energy, which oversees Los Alamos, stands by its firing of Wenho Li. Earlier today, we spoke with Energy Secretary Bill Richardson.
I fired Wenho Li because of security problems he caused at the laboratories. He failed to notify the lab officials when he had contacts with members of a sensitive country, China. He also failed to properly safeguard classified material. He tried to deceive lab people about security-related issues. On that basis, I terminated him, and after that termination, it was discovered that he had transferred very, very sensitive classified information from the classified component of his computer to unclassified. These are massive violations of security, and it reinforced the view that this man was not security conscious, and my decision to terminate him, in my judgment, was the right one, as was hundreds of other lab employees that are familiar with this case.
Dr. Li argues that he's not the only one who has downloaded items into his computer, and the question comes up of why not prosecute James Deutsch, the former CIA chief, who also downloaded into his laptop computer, and that was at his home, whereas Dr. Li's was at his office in Los Alamos. When Dr. Li seems to be presenting a case of selective enforcement here.
I'm not familiar with Mr. Deutsch's issue, but I am familiar with this individual at Los Alamos who, in our judgment, when you have nuclear weapons design information and you transfer it from a classified computer to an open, accessible computer that anybody could get into, I would say that is a pretty serious violation. At the very least, should be terminated, and that's what's happened.
But he says that other people have done that as well.
Well, I don't accept that. I think that's pure bunk, that every lab scientist does that. That is not the case. Lab scientists are security conscious. They're patriots. They know the difference between what is classified and unclassified, and especially nuclear weapons design information. They would not put it on an open computer. So this is a very false charge that is being made by an individual who is feeling the heat right now.
Two congressional committees have been weighing in on this. Most recently, last week, the Senate report saying that there had been a failure to more completely investigate this case, that perhaps by going after Dr. Lee, the person who may have passed on information, persons may be getting away with that. Do you leave open that possibility that maybe y'all were going after the wrong guy here?
What I can say about those Senate reports is that they were thorough, they were good. They basically said that the agencies involved, Energy, Justice, and FBI, could have coordinated better. There were massive breakdowns in information and communication. From my side, I am going to hold those officials accountable at the Department of Energy and at the Los Alamos Labs, who failed in this case of the alleged suspect who made mistakes, and I'll be announcing this disciplinary action shortly.
Can you tell me a bit about this announcement?
Well, I hope in a week, although you have to be very careful and thorough to me making this announcement, where we will discipline individuals at Los Alamos and the Department of Energy for failure to act properly, effectively, efficiently, in a timely fashion in this case of the alleged suspect. This would be holding officials accountable that made mistakes. And again, the chips are going to fall where they may. And my hope is to complete this very soon. We are in the business of not just safeguarding our nuclear weapons, but protecting from espionage. And there are a lot of espionage attempts, but we are fixing the problem. We are completing the counterintelligence and security reforms that the Congress has wanted us to do.
I'd like to touch a bit on that. The Chinese government's way of spying seems different from other spying that the U.S. government has encountered before. The Russians would pay for information, and we are told that the Chinese appeal more to some feelings of loyalty to the motherland by those scientists who may have some Chinese ties, and that the Chinese will pry small bits of information from many people and piece together the puzzle on their own. Sometimes these people may be providing information unwittingly, not knowing that they're spies.
Well, your characterization is accurate. They're very skillful. They engage in very effective counter-espionage on our facilities. Now, spying is common among nations. You can't just cloak yourself in goodness here. That doesn't mean that you don't take preventive measures immediately to stop that, and you try to scrutinize Chinese visitors and others that are coming into our labs. We're doing that. We're tightening up.
But what about the Chinese-born scientist who works at Los Alamos and goes to Beijing on some scientific conference outside the scope of the FBI and others?
Well, we have made some very strong counterintelligence security measures with anybody that travels outside of the country, all our scientists that go to conferences. We are very careful, though, not just to target Chinese Americans, because we don't want to send a message that it's only Asian Americans that we're looking at. Everybody is vulnerable. Everybody, every nationality, ethnic American, and we're sending a message we're not targeting Asian Americans. That is wrong. That would be racially profiling people. And I've made many speeches and directives, and I've gone to see our Asian American scientists and said, look, we're just making sure all security is tight. We're not just targeting you. Every human being that has contact with nuclear weapons design has got to improve their security consciousness.
That was Energy Secretary Bill Richardson, who we spoke with earlier today. What's happened at Los Alamos has raised a number of issues. Was Wenho Li a spy or a scapegoat? Will the government be able to charge him with espionage or a lesser security breach? How does the U.S. protect its nuclear secrets? China is said to practice a type of spying unlike what the U.S. is accustomed to, and the question would be whether there is an effective way of dealing with that kind of spying. Our guests this hour to talk about Los Alamos and the lessons from it are Stephen Schwartz, Executive Director of the Educational Foundation for Nuclear Science and publisher of the Bulletin of American Scientists. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Also with us is Barbara Bradley, NPR's Justice Department correspondent, who has been covering this case from the start. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Melinda.
And Paul Moore, the FBI's chief intelligence analyst on China for 20 years until last September. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Barbara, I'd like to start with you. This story's been percolating for a while, and no charges yet brought against Wenho Lee. A grand jury's considering this. Do we have any indication of whether we will hear charges against him?
At this point, you know, it's kind of interesting that this case was billed as the largest security breach in American history. And there's been so much talk about Wenho Lee and these breaches, and yet, to this point, we haven't had an indictment. Apparently, there has been a grand jury that's been meeting in Albuquerque. For a while, at least, that grand jury stopped hearing testimony, and apparently there are some there's some major disputes about whether they should go forward. There are disputes on several things. One, what should they charge, indict Wenho Lee for? Should it be spying? Should it be mishandling computer information, national security information? People think it's going to be the latter. Another is there the evidence, or is this a proper type of crime to charge someone with if you're going to put him in jail for 10 years? Is there the evidence to show that he had the intent to mishandle this kind of information? And then there's a third problem, and that is, should information like this about nuclear warheads, should that be presented in an open court? And apparently there's a big debate right now between the Energy Department and the Justice Department as to whether Energy will put that kind of information in open court, or whether they say, gee, this information is way too valuable, we're not going to put this out there for other people to hear.
And that could mean a lesser charge.
It could mean a lesser charge. It could mean absolutely no indictment whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Schwartz, you're the publisher of Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, who I imagine are following this case very slowly. What's your take on it? Is this the biggest breach, and could this be a turning point for the way you do business?
Well, we have been following it very closely since the story broke in the New York Times in March in a big way, although, of course, news about the Cox Committee report, which led to this firestorm near hysteria about China, information from that was leaked as early as the end of last year. I'm not sure whether it is the biggest breach. I mean, that is the line that the Cox Committee put out, that information on all seven of our active current nuclear weapons in our arsenal were transmitted to China in one form or another. Now, they don't explain in that report exactly what information was transmitted, if any was transmitted. And I think there's a big gap there that has to be filled. There's a lot of information publicly available today, some of it declassified by the U.S. government over the years, some of it derived from documents but not officially declassified. And then there's a huge category of information that still remains classified, much of it properly so. But it's hard to say at this point whether what China's alleged to have stolen was in fact the product of something of an espionage program, or was it the product of its own efforts to collect information from the public forum. And it's useful to look, I think, at the damage assessment that was conducted by the entire U.S. intelligence community that was released in mid-April, which noted that two things. One is that China's aggressive collection effort, and no one disputes that it is aggressive, it would only be natural for China to spy on us, has not resulted in any apparent modernization of their deployed strategic force or any new nuclear weapons deployment. In other words, if they did steal something, they haven't made any use of it. And the other point they made was that China's technical advances have been made on the basis of classified and unclassified information derived from espionage, contact with U.S. and other countries' scientists, conferences and publications, unauthorized media disclosures, declassified U.S. nuclear weapons information, and Chinese indigenous development. The relative contribution of each cannot be determined. That's the key.
Well, Paul Moore, this China was your area for 20 years at the FBI. What is misunderstood, do you think, in the general public about the way the Chinese spying is conducted, if the Chinese have spied here?
Right. Well, China has its own philosophy of intelligence. And the Chinese model of intelligence is that you want to practice intelligence the way that our stockbrokers advise us to practice investing. You don't go for the big kill. You try to get rich over the long term. You try to get very rich in very small increments. And so what China tries to do is to collect information from a large number of people. It tries to bet on all the horses in the race if it can. Tries to collect a small amount of information from a large number of people, and it tries to get that information when they visit China.
This would be scientists who come from the U.S. to China for conferences? Or
businessmen, scientists, all the information that China needs. China tries to lure people to come to China where the Chinese can apply their best techniques on their home ground and bleed information out of people in very small amounts. Now, this is a problem for the United States because we're in a no-win situation. I'm sure Mr. Schwartz will agree with me wholeheartedly on at least this point. If we take our nuclear scientists, it's quite clear to everybody that you can stop China's nuclear spying, you can stop everybody's nuclear spying by just locking these people up in Los Alamos and throwing away the key. And you never let them out. Nobody goes out, nobody comes in, and we have an absolutely secure facility. The problem is that we don't have a very good research program.
And we'll come back to that point in a moment. Right now, though, you're listening to Talk of the Nation. When we come back from this short break, we'll talk more about the investigation into how China obtained American nuclear secrets, and we'll start taking your calls. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. If you'd like to send us an email, the address is totn@npr.org. At 21 minutes past the hour, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Penkava. Today we're talking about the controversy over what went wrong with investigations into spying or leaking of secrets at the Los Alamos National Laboratories. Our guests this hour are Stephen Schwartz, Executive Director of the Educational Foundation for Nuclear Science. He's also publisher of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. Barbara Bradley, NPR's Justice Department correspondent, is with us, and so is Paul Moore, former FBI Chief Intelligence Analyst on China. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number here is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Now, just before the break, Paul Moore, you were saying that the surefire way, if you wanted to reduce your risk of China being able to get secrets out of people who have some tie to China, scientists, was to keep people from leaving Los Alamos.
I said that if that was your goal, was to have an absolutely secure facility, and I'd better clarify this point before we have another march on Washington. You could lock everybody up, and that would end the problem. But you can't do that, not just because it's not the right thing to do, it's also not the smart thing to do for your country. The thing of it is that we have world-class scientists working at our laboratories, but we don't have all the world-class scientists working at the labs. In order to have a world-class program and continue it down the road, it is absolutely necessary for our scientists to go out and hobnob with the other scientists and exchange ideas, because they do not have a monopoly on the ideas of the world, but they're so well educated and have such a great background that if they go and they talk with the other people, then they can absorb some of their ideas and they can maintain the U.S. Edge in all these fields.
So it's a two-way street, you're saying there.
That's right. That's right. But you can guarantee that you will have a second-rate program if you try to stop the contact of your scientists with their counterparts in the world. So on the one hand, you have a sure thing loser approach if you have such massive security that nobody can talk to anybody. Now, if you have a program which says it's necessary, as it is obvious, for our scientists to go out and talk to other scientists, that means you also have a program where other scientists can go talk to your scientists. Mm-hmm. So you're bound to be giving away some information there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stephen Schwartz, what do you think about that? What would your approach be? Do you acknowledge that there is a security risk in cases of some people who might have a loyalty to the land of their ancestors? I just want to know if you acknowledge that, for starters.
Well, I certainly agree with Paul that shutting down the labs or curtailing foreign travel would be the perfect solution to our security problems, because everybody would quit and we wouldn't have a nuclear weapons program anymore. But he's absolutely right. Science functions best in a free and open society. We don't have a monopoly on this. Much of the science that our nuclear weapons engineers and scientists use, the basis for it is, in fact, unclassified. And it's absolutely essential for them to be able to travel and talk to other people. Now, clearly, we don't want people spilling the beans, as it were, about our program. But to shut off that, to turn our weapons labs into Soviet-style weapons labs, I mean, all we have to do is look over the Atlantic and see what's happened over there to realize how dangerous and wrong-headed that would be. As far as the approach here, I mean, since we're talking about Wenho Li, one reason I think, and Barbara hinted at this, why the government's having difficulty making this case is that there is no tangible evidence, first of all, that any information was in fact passed to China, or that Wenho Li in fact has any connections to the homeland, as it were. Mm-hmm. He was born in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. He did visit China twice. Both of those trips were approved by the laboratory. Things that he said there, official talks that he gave, they were approved by the laboratory. And when he came back, he did report, although apparently in one instance he didn't fully report, his contacts with Chinese officials. But to say that he is somehow, because he traveled there, that he could have done this, I think is a mistake. And the government certainly hasn't been able to make the case yet. The jury is literally still out.
But what of that other thing that was left open from the report last week, that perhaps the government went after the wrong man here, that there might have been other people who might have, I think some of them were of Chinese, that were born in China. And what if it went through them?
Right. Well,
and so I guess the question comes back to, what is there some way we can, on the one hand, acknowledge civil liberties and give these people who are American citizens the right to carry on their work there, and on the other, maintain the national security?
Right. Well, as long as we're on the case, the subject of civil liberties, even alleged spies, whether they're U.S. citizens or not, and Wenho Li is a naturalized American citizen, have rights. They have the right to be presumed innocent until proven guilty, and that right was violated in the case of Wenho Li when he was named, when somebody provided his name to the New York Times. When Bill Richardson said on 60 Minutes on August 1st that he's done everything he can to safeguard and protect Dr. Li's reputation, he clearly has not done that, because he was all over the news shows saying Wenho Li this and Wenho Li that. In terms of the report that you mentioned, I did read that over the weekend, and it is a fascinating and troubling report, and I commend anybody who's interested in this subject to go to the website of the Senate Governmental Affairs Committee and download it. It's basically a tragicomedy of errors, or a tragedy of errors, as Senator Lieberman said last week. The FBI didn't tell the Justice Department everything that it was doing, and the Justice Department and the FBI got its signals crossed, and the result, one of the problems is that the DOE very early on did single out Wenho Li. And if you look at the very first report in the New York Times about this case in March, it said he stuck out like a sore thumb. But it turns out now that there were several other people also at Los Alamos, also Chinese Americans, who could potentially have also stuck out like sore thumbs. And they apparently were not investigated until this year, once the Wenho Li saga broke.
Stephen, can I jump in here? I was talking to someone earlier today, one of the chief spy prosecutors for 25 years or so, and he was telling me that this idea of using what's called a matrix analysis to narrow down your possible suspects is fairly common in spy cases. Now, in this case with Wenho Li, it was they asked three questions. One, who at Los Alamos had access to this W88 design information? Number two, who had gone to China during the period of 1984 to 1988, which is when they thought the W88 information was leaked to China? And third, who had contact with visiting delegations from China? So they, as you said, they narrowed this down. They got down to five or six possible suspects. Lieberman points out that information could have come from other laboratories as well. Other people could have had access to that W88 information. But apparently, from what I understand, the the FBI and DOE kind of narrowed down the use this matrix analysis a little bit more severely than they have in other cases. For example, I believe they used it in the Aldrich Ames case to narrow down, you know,
correct,
to a few suspects. But it was sufficiently flexible that that they were able to come up with a better analysis. In this case, as you said, Melinda, a lot of people, the trails went cold on other people. And, I mean, the report also brings up the point that we don't even know if they're We don't know if Wen Ho Lee leaked information. We don't know if there were others who leaked information either. We don't know if whether they just cobbled together the information and got it from a whole lot of different sources.
Or, I think, as Paul Moore was talking about, unwitting spies, people that didn't know that they were providing information.
Sure.
Well, I think they do know they provide information. It's not really espionage that we're dealing with here. The Chinese do not generally ask people to commit espionage. I think we have to get that clear right off. The Chinese, if they don't ask people to commit espionage, because if they do, the answer is no, I won't commit espionage. So they don't ask it. Instead, what they do is they ask people to give them a little bit of help. And they ask them to do something, to give a response to questions which would be considered perhaps a little bit indiscreet. The Chinese are not after espionage, they're after indiscretion. Now, if you can get somebody onto indiscretion, then you have a slippery slope. And, of course, that slope is going to slide all the way down right there to espionage at the end. But when people get onto it, they're just talking indiscreetly. And you can approach scientists in various ways. You can say, you can go after them for altruism. And you can say, well, you know, science has no boundaries, and it's very important for us all to put our heads together. Of course, you put yours here a little bit more than I put mine, but it's important that we share this information. Or you can approach them on the basis of ego, and you can say someone as smart and as accomplished as yourself must know at least 100 things that would be invaluable to the research that I'm doing and would not hurt the United States one little bit. And then they try to play the game to get one of those 100 things. If you ask somebody to give you one of 100 things, and he says, well, this really wouldn't hurt anybody, then the answer is not always no. The answer is sometimes, okay, I can tell you a little bit.
1-800-989-8255 is the number, 1-800-989-TALK, if you'd like to join our guests, Paul Moore, Barbara Bradley, and Stephen Schwartz. Let's start out with Roy in San Diego. Hi there, Roy.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. I actually have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
My first question was that I had read somewhere that Wen Ho Lee had failed a test question, a lie detector test question, when he had been asked if he had ever passed on information. And I want to know if that was true, and if it is true, how come it wasn't looked into further? And my second question was, is the FBI doing more training now for its agents in counterintelligence, since it's becoming an increasingly important factor in their jobs?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, let's put that. Stephen Schwartz?
Well, Paul might be better equipped to answer the second part. The first part stems from the report that was released last week by Senators Thompson and Lieberman, and Wen Ho Lee was indeed asked a question whether he had passed classified information about the W-88 to unauthorized persons. Whether or not that question was the thing that triggered the failure of that polygraph test, which then resulted in his dismissal in March, it's not clear from the report, but he was in fact asked that question. It's important to know, however, that he also passed two other polygraph tests where he was presumably asked similar questions. So, and again, of course, polygraph tests are not admissible in a court of law.
Right.
Right, and they're not admissible because they don't tell you whether somebody's telling you the truth or not. What they do is they measure the stress that people encounter when they're asked different kinds of questions. And there's always a factor of cultures going on here and whatnot. And normally the use of a polygraph, its best use is to identify problem areas that people are concerned about on the test. And then an interviewer will go in and say, look, there must be something here that's causing this machine to go a little bit high in this reading. Let's talk about this some more. And they try to draw out further facts and get some clarification of issues. By itself, a polygraph doesn't mean anything. I don't think even the FBI argues that that the polygraph should stand alone. It just points the way to areas where you're supposed to do some further investigation.
Mm-hmm. And Roy's other question was whether the FBI was doing any more in terms of training agents on counterintelligence. And
Yes. Yes, the FBI is. Unfortunately, one of the dividends of winning the Cold War was that the FBI turned around and it said, wow, let's redeploy all these agents who've been working in counterintelligence matters, and let's have them work against Russian organized crime and all kinds of other pursuits. Some of them actually did applicant interviews, which would be at the low end of the FBI scale of activities. A lot of people retired and whatnot, and now they now have sort of a counterintelligence gap, and they're trying to train people to fill this. In the case of the Chinese problem, however, you need a few years of experience working against the Chinese before you get very good at it. So it's a problem for the FBI right now.
And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Kim is in Stanford, California. Hi, Kim.
Hi. I'm the director of the Asian American Public Policy Institute and been working very closely with Senator Boxer's office and the White House on this issue. But the one comment I wanted to make is, you know, the obvious. Ever since this crisis erupted, Asian American scientists, you know, there was initially talk of polygraphing all of them, so on and so forth, and then because of the furor that people like I and I Institute created, the Energy Department and the FBI scaled that back. For the simple reason that when, in the past, when an Israeli spy was detected in the U.S., not all Israeli Americans were subjected to the same kind of scrutiny as Asian Americans now are. And similarly, with the Russian spies in the past, and this is a very obvious thing that I'm saying, that this country, you cannot have Chinese Americans claiming to have allegiance to homeland being China without being castigated. I was at USC when Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated, and we had a candlelight ceremony for him, and the flag of Israel was draped on the Trojan statue. Now, if we had a similar event which was Japanese American, and God forbid if the Japanese flag was put on any national monument or statue, you know, there would have been hue and cry in this country. Mm-hmm. We know about the Japanese internment, what happened in World War II. The German Americans were not interned during World War II.
Well, let's talk about this. Stephen Schwartz, Barbara, Paul Moore. Kim is raising this issue that they are being picked on here.
I can provide some insight into this. The U.S. counterintelligence programs, be they FBI or Department of Energy, or other agencies with responsibilities, do not key on Chinese Americans or Japanese Americans or people from Taiwan or anything like that because of their ancestry. What the programs do is they observe the activities of adversary nations and they key on those activities. And then the programs become interested in the same people that the adversary intelligence programs are interested in. So a high percentage of cases in the Chinese foreign counterintelligence area will be of Americans who are of ethnic Chinese ancestry, and that's because that virtually all of the significant cases of Chinese intelligence activity utilize people who are of ethnic Chinese ancestry.
No, I agree, but what I'm saying is when initially the furor, when this Wen Holi case first erupted, I mean, how dare even a single senator or congressman casts aspersions, and the Cox report is blatantly anti-Chinese American. You know, can you give me a single instance when the Chinese, when the Israeli spy, you know, who was discovered, or in the past when we have had Russian spies? Can you give me a single instance when any elected official casts aspersions on the entire Jewish American community?
Well, I don't see that anybody has cast aspersions on Chinese Americans.
Oh, I mean, the Cox report, from beginning to the end, he talks about how practically every Chinese American is one of the 1,000 points of light, filling up the entire mosaic of the Chinese master plan to gather information on a piece-by-piece basis, which is something which you yourself referred to earlier in this program.
Right, right. Well, you're misreading and you're misinterpreting the comments. What people are talking about is what China is doing. China is practicing an intelligence philosophy which concentrates on making as much use as possible of people of ethnic Chinese ancestry. It doesn't say anything about the people that they target. These are just innocent people that are targeted. We're talking about Chinese preferences. It's just as though I went into a bar and I decided to strike up conversations only with people who were blondes. At the end of the night, you would say, my goodness, he's talked only to blondes. Does that have anything? What does that have to say about blonde people? Don't they have any sense to talk to this person? No, it has nothing to do with blondes. It has everything to do with my preferences. And that's what we're looking at here. The Chinese prefer to talk to ethnic Chinese, and it's a problem with People's Republic of China intelligence practices, not with Chinese-American vulnerabilities.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Penkava. Our guests are Paul Moore, Stephen Schwartz, and Barbara Bradley. We're going to take a short break right now. When we come back, we will take more of your calls about Los Alamos and the lessons to be learned from there. That number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. At 40 minutes past the hour, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, working to make the arts and culture an active part of people's everyday lives. Ericsson, developing communication solutions that provide freedom of mobility for users the world over. Ericsson helps you to make yourself heard. Ericsson.com. And Time Magazine. This week, Time examines the Blair Witch Project, this summer's sleeper film, and gets reactions from the people of Burkittsville, Maryland, where it was set. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
3 years ago, amid much fanfare, a planned community opened in Florida. Backed by Disney, the town of Celebration was to be the start of a bold social experiment, applying cutting-edge ideas about urban planning. Today, complaints about construction, community rules, and schools have taken some of the shine off this new utopia. I'm Melinda Penkava. Trouble in Paradise? Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Penkava. At this time tomorrow, tune in for a look at how drug trafficking in Colombia and the role of the U.S. military in trying to stop that. Today, though, we're talking about the investigation at Los Alamos Laboratories and what it means for national security. Our guests this hour are Stephen Schwartz, Executive Director of the Educational Foundation for Nuclear Science and publisher of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, Barbara Bradley, NPR's Justice Department correspondent, and Paul Moore, former FBI Chief Intelligence Analyst on China. If you'd like to join us, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. We haven't gone into too much detail yet, and I'd like to, about what the report last week referred to as the mess-ups that were happening in the investigation. There was a lead there that there was a security problem at Los Alamos. Barbara, what are some of those things, and is the government taking steps to fix that, or are they practical steps that the government's taking?
Well, the government does say, both the Department of Energy and the FBI say that they are taking steps to fix some of the problems. And both agencies have said they agree with the report. They messed up. Both of them will tell you that. We've mentioned there are several things that they did wrong. We've mentioned one of them, that they narrowed much too quickly, it appears, to focus on Wen Ho Lee, letting other people kind of fall by the wayside. We also mentioned the search warrant problem. I mean, this was really kind of a Keystone's Cop issue. As early as 1996, the FBI knew that they wanted to search Wenho Lee's computer. And so they wanted to get a secret warrant. It's called a FISA warrant. Well, they could have gone several routes. One is they could have asked his permission. Another is that DOE employees have signed a waiver to let people look at their computer. Another is they could get a regular search warrant or a secret search warrant. And essentially, for many, many reasons, miscommunication and lots of other things and delays and kind of FBI dropping the ball, they couldn't get a warrant. They couldn't get the probable cause to justify getting a warrant showing that there Wenho Lee was so suspicious that they had a right to go and violate essentially his civil liberties. So they never searched his computer. And meanwhile, he's downloading these legacy codes. We don't know to what end, but he was downloading this very secret information. And also kind of the typical FBI methods didn't work, partly because the Chinese spy so differently. And let me give you one case in point. A typical method that Chinese, a typical sting operation is called a false flag operation. In this case, two Chinese FBI agents approached Wenho Lee, I believe it was in 1997, and offered to pay him money in exchange for information. Well, anyone who knows, Paul Moore can talk about this, anyone who knows the way the Chinese operate will know that that's not going to work. What's wrong with this picture? Well, first, the Chinese don't take money for spying. They build on relationships and they will give information as a part of an exchange. The second is they don't, Wenho Lee didn't know these people. Typically, that's not, information is not given kind of in a cold call like that. And so Wenho Lee turned them down. And so once again, kind of every lead that they were taking, Wenho Lee appeared not to make the typical spy mistakes. And finally, I'll just mention one other thing very briefly. One of the things that's going to hurt them if they in fact do go to trial involves the interrogation. As Paul said, that the use of a polygraph is to kind of glean information, not to use a polygraph in a court of law. What happened in the case of the polygraph with Wenho Lee in December of 1998 is instead of the FBI doing this polygraph and preparing for it, the Department of Energy, they hired a contractor to do it. The upshot of that was that they could not use the polygraph to its best effect. You use a polygraph to essentially pressure someone into a confession. As I understand it, Paul could confirm or deny this, but as I understand it, most confessions, most guilty pleas or spy cases result in a confession. And that's what a polygraph is used for. Well, because they were unprepared in this December 98 polygraph, essentially, you know, they didn't get a confession, and by the time the FBI interviewed him, 3 months later, he was unwilling to cooperate. So you can see all these things are going to make it kind of difficult for them to bring about a compelling case.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stephen Schwartz, somebody representing atomic scientists, how does this talk about, you know, cracking down more sit with you about higher security and such? Do you see a downside to that, or is that how it could make everybody happy and more secure with the idea that national security is being preserved?
Well, there's a fine line, and I think it's important to recognize that the reason, the tight security that comes around science these days is a direct offshoot of the Manhattan Project during World War II. Science and security, science and nuclear weapons, have always existed together somewhat uneasily. As we talked about earlier, science functions best in a free and open society. And if you are constantly having to watch what you say and what you do and whom you talk to, it's very hard to get things done. It's also hard when the information is so highly compartmentalized within your workplace that you may not know what your colleague who is working on something related to your project is working on because you don't have a need to know. This ends up sometimes causing delays, costing money, and so forth. Clearly, there were some serious mistakes made in this investigatory process, and clearly there has been slipshod security at the laboratories going way back into the 1980s, 1970s, and some of that we documented in an article that I wrote in the May and June issue of our magazine. But the General Accounting Office has produced a pile of reports over the years talking about mishandled documents and people being allowed access into areas to which they were not authorized, and so on and so forth. None of those instances, or some of those instances, may have in fact resulted in or helped in espionage cases, particularly with regard to the loss of neutron bomb data, but it's really hard to know. So I think that there does have to be some tightening of security at the laboratories, but we don't want to make it so tight and so onerous that the scientists who are working there decide that they've just had it, that they can't do their work anymore, and therefore they're going to quit. And then where would we be with our nuclear weapons program?
1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. David joins us now from Gebenbach, Germany. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you. I had two things I wanted to discuss. One was that as a U.S. government employee in Germany, I signed a paper saying that my automobile and my effects are subject to search any time I go on military reservation. Why do they need a search warrant for that computer in New Mexico? Secondly, another caller mentioned Chinese American. To me, that indicates loyalty. You have one foot in one area of loyalty and another foot in another area of loyalty. I don't understand the divided loyalty in hiring people who describe themselves as an American and something else.
Well,
can you address that, please?
Certainly, but I think it might be said that it's known on your application where you were born. I don't think that's something that people are necessarily describing themselves as -- Americans. If they were born in another place, that might well come out there in just basically in your application to work there. But somebody else could comment on that.
I've addressed this problem, many times, and ended up in trouble many times talking about it. The situation is that with regard to the People's Republic of China is that there is a clash of cultures, there's a clash in intelligence cultures as well as other aspects of culture. And essentially the United States regards it as one of our country's major strengths is that people from many lands have come here and we're able to draw on their talents and create this wonderful country with all of its gigantic accomplishments. The Chinese view of of the world situation is that Chinese people have gone to many lands and they have been spectacularly successful there, and China from time to time has the right to go out and contact them and say, couldn't you please help the ancestral land just a little bit out of loyalty to the old country. Basically, China has a lot of trouble selling this to people because it's not the right thing to do generally. So they contact as many people as they can, as many people as possible of ethnic Chinese ancestry, and make this sort of approach to them in the confidence that if they make enough approaches, some people will help them somehow, somewhere, someday. So they work they work with it with this program the way that people practice buying insurance. The Chinese want to develop relationships with people, with large numbers of people, in the hope that some of them will provide information someday. Just the way that we keep paying and paying money for insurance policies so that we can get coverage someday should we need it.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Stephen Schwartz, what of that, the issue that the caller just raised?
Sure. Well, David raised a good point, and it is addressed in the Senate's report last week. Wen-Ho Lee, in fact, did sign a waiver authorizing laboratory officials to look at his computer, and there was apparently also, it was also notified that his email and other transactions on his computer would be monitored from time to time, if not all the time. But there was miscommunication between the FBI agents investigating the case and officials at Los Alamos, and so they were deciding, they didn't realize that he'd signed this thing, and they were deciding, well, do we have to go and actually get a search warrant now? And then that led to the whole going up to the Department of Justice and trying to make the case that he was, in fact, there was enough probable cause that we should be able to go and do all these things. So it was as Senator Lieberman said, a tragedy of errors. As to the second part of David's comment about people identifying themselves as something hyphen American, I don't think that can be used as a determination of one's loyalties. Wenho Li has been in this country for most of his adult life, and I think to tar him or anybody else who identifies themselves as Chinese Americans or Irish Americans or whatever, I think is falling into a very slippery slope.
And Joe joins us now. Hi there, Joe.
Oh, thank you. I think that a major mistake was made when Wenho Li was fired. I think it would have been much more effective to have approached him there at his job and said, there are people in Washington who have raised serious concerns, and we're going to work with you to clear you, but we need to take you off of your sensitive job until we can get you cleared. So let's work together to clear your name and show those folks who have the suspicions that indeed these are untrue. And I think the case could have gone a whole lot better if they played good cop with him rather than bad cop.
Well, I think they actually lost that opportunity a little bit earlier on. In the first place, 2 days before Wenho Li was fired, there was much information of the case. The whole story broke in the New York Times. And it was either that day or shortly thereafter that Wenho Li's name was leaked to the press, and that tends to clam people up. So I think they were working from around December of 98 on. They were working with someone who was probably not really very willing to cooperate with him, with the FBI. I think they may have lost that chance. I mean, they were monitoring, they were trying to keep an eye on Wenho Li for about 2 years, keeping him in sensitive positions, and nothing really turned up. I'm not sure if he would have cooperated, but it appears that tactically they lost that opportunity when they botched the initial interview, and then his name was splashed across the pages of the New York Times.
I don't agree with that, and the reason is I think Wenho Li was looking for friends and support at that time, and somebody from sort of within the family there at his place at work who would then say, we are here to help you, to clear you. I think indeed, and there's a possibility he is innocent, and had he been innocent, he could have become very cooperative in those efforts, perhaps indeed clearing his name, or if he is guilty, we don't know, which way it is, he may indeed have tripped himself up in feigning this.
Joe, I'm sorry, but you're going to have the last word today because we have run out of time. Thanks for your call. I want to thank everybody who called. Our guests, Stephen Schwartz, Executive Director of the Educational Foundation for Nuclear Science and publisher of the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. He joined us from NPR's Chicago Bureau. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Paul Moore, former FBI Chief Intelligence Analyst on China, who joined us here in Studio 3A. Thank you so much, Paul.
You're welcome.
And Barbara Bradley, NPR's Justice Department Correspondent, also here in 3A. Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you.
Earlier, we heard from Energy Secretary Bill Richardson. He spoke to us from his office in Washington. In Washington, I'm Melinda Pencava, NPR News.
This program is a production of National Public Radio. The views expressed are not necessarily those of NPR, the underwriters, or this broadcast station. NPR is solely responsible for this program. Tapes and transcripts of this program are available. Call anytime, toll-free, 1-877-NPR-TEXT. That's 1-877-NPR-TEXT.
Support for National Public Radio comes from this and other National Public Radio stations. Contributors also include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting public understanding of technology, industry, and the American standard of living, the W. Alton Jones Foundation, supporting public understanding of the importance of healthy ecosystems for people's lives, www.wajones.org, and the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Last month, five American soldiers on a counter-narcotics mission died in Colombia when their spy plane crashed. For years, the U.S. has walked a fine line in Colombia, providing assistance to anti-drug efforts while trying not to get involved in the country's civil war. I'm Melinda Pencava. We'll look at how the U.S. war on drugs is being fought in Colombia. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.